This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Come on, man!
Intercepted, big man! Oh, and the ball is out! Intercepted, Dante Jackson has it!
Live from the Rich Eisen Studios in New York City.
High, intercepted! Cam Hart has it! Intercepted, game over!
Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday. Coming up, actor Tony Goldwyn. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All righty, everybody. Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show, live from the Rich Eisen Show studios for the week in New York City, in downtown Manhattan, where Disney and Disney Plus and ESPN app comes to you. We also have ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance, Sirius XM Channel 80. We say hello to everybody out there, 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on this program. We've already chatted with Jeff Saturday in hour number one. Tony Goldwyn, the actor from such terrific shows like Law & Order and also the President of the United States from Scandal.
That's right.
Yep. He was also in the movie Ghost, The Pelican Brief, currently also in One Battle After Another, which is now 9-time Golden Globe nominated, as we found out yesterday. He's coming in studio in about 20 minutes' time right there. We've got my guys to my right, Chris Brockman, TJ Jefferson, and
Rich?
Mike Del Tufo has made it here. He's not mixing the show. He's just sitting here.
It's actually
which is great. You enjoy that?
I like this. I'm liking it.
You actually pay attention to what we're saying.
Yes, yeah. Because I'm actually involved. It's like when I'm behind the board.
You're involved.
I'm really not involved.
Okay.
I'm glad that your swag shirts that you wear every day made the trip too.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for dressing up.
You're very good. No,
hey, you know me.
I gotta love Mike Del Tufo.
I am wearing pants.
Here in New York City. Hey, listen.
I saw the tree.
We started the program talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, and My counsel again to everybody in Philadelphia is to still relax. Now, the conference is gone. The Super Bowl, you can't sit here and say that's definitely gone. The conference right now for the Eagles sitting at 8-5, they do have that win over the Rams sitting in their back pocket. But because this is professional football and not college football, they can't talk about great wins that they've had and how that could be utilized to get themselves into the playoffs. This is the NFL, and the problem for them is they need the Rams to have the same record as they have, and the Rams currently at 10-3 are sitting two games in front of them, and that is no good. That's no bueno. So I don't think the Rams are going to be two games worse than the Eagles the rest of the way.
Doesn't feel like it.
Okay, but they need to be two games worse than the Cowboys the rest of the way in order to lose the division. I don't see that one either. Certainly when they got the Raiders coming next, and I was counseling patience, Philadelphia Eagles fan, Rich Eisen Show, if you don't mind me saying, social media grandmaster Jake Culp is a diehard Eagles fan. He cut up my Eagles take, put it out there on our Instagram and TikTok. I believe the mentions are approaching dumpster fire status. Eagles fans don't want to hear it. But that's the reality of it, is you got to be two games worse than the Cowboys to not make the playoffs at all. And you got to be two games better than the Rams in order to be the one seed. I'd rather sit here and say you're going to be a division winner. You're going to have a home game against somebody. And who are you going to beat? That's a problem down the road. But the ultimate problem that everybody's saying is it's going to be like the 2023 season where we're not even going to have a home playoff game. We're going to be one and done. You're going to have to be one and done at home if that's going to be the same fate of the same ending of your season. So that's my repeating at the top of the hour about what I said about the Eagles to start. The Los Angeles Chargers are 9-4. The Los Angeles Chargers started the season 3-0 and 3-0 in division, but then started losing players left, right, up, and down. From Khalil Mack, who they got back, to Joe Alt, who they got back, and then lost again. And then Justin Herbert, they lost a healthy non-throwing hand last week on his body. And all he did last night was have his body thrown around like a rag doll half the time, where he was under attack because the offensive line for the Chargers, as well as it's trying to play, being completely reconstituted because of injuries that keep besetting that unit that is always the lifeblood of a Jim Harbaugh team. Sacked 7 times, and when he wasn't sacked 7 times, he was running for his life or just running the football as the leading rusher of this team, which is not optimum. But at the end of the day, this team gave up 100 yards to Saquon Barkley and A.J. Brown. And at the end of the day, this team beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And now also, talk about toughness. Herbert embodies it. Talk about toughness. This defense embodies it. Talk about toughness. The Los Angeles Chargers are now 2-0 in road games at home against teams from Pennsylvania. I was there the night for the Pittsburgh Steelers showing up on Sunday Night Football. It was jam-packed with black and gold and Steelers terrible towels everywhere and Herbert having to go silent snap count. And last night I'm getting texts from friends at home saying, you know, from the East Coast, saying, what is up with all the Eagles fans there? Mm-hmm. And it's bad. I mean, it's gotten better for the Rams.
It has gotten better for the
Rams. But the Chargers fan base is beginning to grow, and hopefully with the winning that's happening, will continue to grow. But, you know, there aren't many Padres fans walking around Los Angeles, California. And that's the reason why I'm pointing out to anybody who's like, what's with the Chargers not being able to get their home fans going? They do have home fans, but in Los Angeles, Eagles fans and Steelers fans are going to show up and take those tickets. And the Chargers in both of those moments, in both of those games, in front of the entire country, one on a Sunday night and one on a Monday night, had their hands full with a road game at home against two teams from Pennsylvania leading their divisions at the time, I might add, and they won them both. They're unbelievable. And the question is where do they go from here? But first things first up is the where do they go from here is whether Justin Herbert can stand up and stand the pain of a left hand that had screws put in it, a plate put in it, surgically repaired, one week before the actual game. He was taking snaps, feeling well enough to hand off with that hand. By the end of the game, he was handing off with the other hand. And by the end of the game, I mean, the ESPN crew did a great job of covering this from Laura Rutledge to the cameras work on Monday Night Football. He was wincing every time he seemed when getting up from the turf. He had this to say about his hand afterwards.
Yeah, it was a broken hand. So,
like, how did you navigate that? Like, you were stiff. It seemed like you were stiff arming people. Like Jim said, it felt like a fake movie, like the stuff you were doing.
At that point, it was probably just instinctual, and obviously, you know, I'd love a couple plays back. Dropped a couple on the ground, and I did everything I could to hold onto the ball, and I just got to be smarter with it, and use two hands and be able to grip it as best as I can.
Well, I don't know. How's it going to hold up? How's it going to work? But so far, so good. Because the defense balls out. The defense took the ball away last night, as we know, even twice on the same play with Jalen Hurts. 4 takeaways there. They got a fumble also, fumble recovery. They were all over the place. And they're missing some people still, too, defensively. But they've got some big-time players there. They've got a big-time defensive coordinator in Jesse Minter. And then they got Jim, who just breathes life and enthusiasm and confidence into everybody. And that's been job one for him. Not just there, but maybe into the fan base that is selling their tickets to Eagles fans. And maybe I don't think the quarterback needs it. But remember how I said that find somebody in your life to love you as much as John Harbaugh loves Lamar Jackson? Well, it's a Harbaugh thing.
It's a Harbaugh thing.
It's a Harbaugh thing to breathe love and confidence in every word out of your mouth into the quarterback. And as you know, Jim Harbaugh appeared on our show in our Los Angeles studios. May I say such a thing?
Okay. We have two.
Yeah, we do. We're bi-coastal. Yeah. And he came on our show during the summer saying he woke up the night before saying, I've got to get Justin Herbert to the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is a guy who is also talking about everything about Justin Herbert, known to man, and now you can add being a superhero to the mix.
And Justin Herbert, he's a superhero. He is a competitive maniac. I mean, he was even stiff-arming guys, you know, with a broken hand. I mean, he had surgery a week ago, and out here tonight, it felt like I was in a like we were in a movie where you know, the quarterback's doing these, and it's like you get to the point where you go, okay, this is getting a little unrealistic. You know, that's what it felt like to me. He is just. He refuses to lose. It's just tough as they get. He's a superhero quarterback.
You knew Jim was going to have
does
a moment
he need
like that.
A super soldier serum? Is that what Harbaugh? I mean, Herbert has.
What, or is for it, Captain America?
Or is it adamantium? What's in him? I think when I think about the Chargers this year, they embody the temperament and the personality of their coach, maybe more so than any other team.
Coaching means so much, man.
They're gritty and they're resilient. If you think about all the injuries, especially on the offensive line and what Herbert's kind of had, he has had one or two kind of nagging things the last couple of seasons. And I think had they have lost yesterday, they might have been out of the playoffs. And now the division is still alive.
How about out?
They're going to be in. It just felt like they were going to be trending in the wrong direction.
I would understand. I mean, you know.
But now it feels like they've locked up a spot, and they're in a good spot going forward if Herbert can manage what's going on with his left hand.
Well, again, when you look at the AFC, because there's three teams that we were all expecting to be in the mix, or two of them at least, with Miami being the third, and the Chiefs and the Ravens being the two I'm referring to. They're 6-7. We all thought the Ravens and the Chargers would be in that mix, right? The 8-5 team that's on the outside looking into the Colts, who are trending in a different direction right now. Right. I mean, which Chargers quarterback would you rather have at 8-5 or 9-4? Justin Herbert or with a broken hand, or Phillip Rivers coming off of a couch at age 44? So the Texans, though, at 8-5 are trending upward. The Bills at 9-4 are trending upward.
Yeah,
the
Chargers now, needed that last night.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
And their next game, though, is at Kansas City. They're trying to sweep the Chiefs, and that would potentially nail the coffin on the Chiefs' ability to even make the playoffs this year. Currently sitting at 16% on the old next-gen stats, and I saw on ESPN yesterday on the flight in the pregame leading up to Monday Night Football, if the Chiefs win out, they'll be their percentage of making the playoffs at 52%.
52, yeah.
So the Chargers need to win that game. And then they also have one last one with the Broncos at the end of the season. And so they have got a very tough schedule. If you put up their schedule, if you don't mind, for the final four games of their season, I just mentioned two of them. And the others are at Dallas and home for Houston, which is a game that potentially I am calling since
the gauntlet.
You know, I don't know. We're going to hear shortly as to which game on NFL Network. It's either Chargers and the Texans or Seattle at Carolina, which are both going to be important for everybody, I would think. But three out of their final four are on the road, literal road games, as opposed to being at home for one. And then there's the Texans. So for them to make the playoffs would have been really tough if they started from an 8-5 base of operations. But with it, the only other 8-5 team on the outside looking in being the Colts, so banged up at the quarterback position, and everyone else at 6-7, I think at 9-4, we're going to see them in the playoffs again. And potentially on the road, most likely.
I had an overreaction.
I just need Justin Herbert to be healthy. I need that left hand to be as healthy as possible, which means let's not get him sacked, and let's not run him around. You know what I mean? If best you can.
Yeah, had they lost last night, I had an overreaction locked and loaded that one of the 6-7 teams was going to make the playoffs and leapfrog them.
But before we throw it a break, finishing up this topic of conversation, normally when Jim Harbaugh talks like he just talked, like superhero this and stiff arming and movies and whatever, that's a Harbaugh file because it's his usual sort of out of left field soundbite.
Right. There was one.
As you noticed, we did not make that a Harbaugh file.
God, I was kind of wondering.
Because this is a Harbaugh file on him describing how great the win was and how it made him feel, winning in the manner in which the Chargers won in overtime against the Eagles on Monday night.
Sometimes people that are standing on third base think they hit a triple, but they didn't.
The Harbaugh file.
Have you ever been a part of a game like this?
Oh, there have been a lot of teams. And this is definitely, maybe the best feeling. Just a wonderful, wonderful feeling of winning and thrill of victory. It's certainly in the discussion. I put in the discussion the birth of my seven children, my marriage, in the conversation.
The Harbaugh File.
I'll applaud that.
It's clapping.
Does he national championship
think before stuff comes out of his mouth?
Alma mater? Does it matter? Does it matter if he's thinking about it?
Not really.
Jim Harbaugh, happy and riffing, is a great Jim Harbaugh.
It's amazing.
Happy and riffing Jim Harbaugh.
Happy and riffing Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh.
And happy and bursting with love. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Keep your career moving forward with growth opportunities, great pay and benefits, and one of the country's top workplaces. Go to careers.progressive.com and apply today. Tony Goldwyn is here.
Let's go.
That's right. This is the Rich Eisen Show live from New York City.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. The actor Tony Goldwyn is here. We just saw a clip from the Far From the Tree podcast you do with your daughter, Anna, about talking with parents and their kids who are in the same profession. Your daughter is a playwright?
Screenwriter
right now.
Okay. Television writer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you want her? Did she find it herself, or did you not want her to be in the same business?
Yeah, no.
I mean, my wife,
Jane, and I, and Jane's also in our business. She's a production designer, a film production designer.
Right.
We didn't push our kids into it.
Right.
But look, I felt really lucky to have found a profession that I'm super passionate about, yeah, and to do something that every day I can't believe I get paid to do it.
Yes.
So when both of our daughters decided they wanted to kind of go into this, my other daughter, Tess, is a writer and an actress and director, and it was just a natural thing. So we didn't stand in their way, but we just tried to give them a sense of what the reality was.
Sure.
Because it's not an easy business to find your way in.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And so what is your first memory of the business? Like, what's your first memory of growing up in your family of show, if you will?
Well, you know, honestly, both of my parents were really careful to keep us away from Hollywood. You know, they didn't want us to grow up to be Hollywood brats.
Right.
And so we weren't really exposed to the business per se. My memories about sort of Hollywood, my grandfather, my father's father, was Samuel Goldwyn, who was one of the pioneers of the film industry, one of the early moguls.
For those who don't know, the G of MGM
was him, right? Yeah, so going to my grandparents' house when I was a little kid, they very much lived the life of sort of the old Hollywood, and it was very formal, and they were just great characters, kind of another era, and so I felt that a lot. But I never met movie stars or went to movie sets or went to fancy Hollywood parties. other than like going to visit my grandparents. Really.
So you'd go to your grandparents' house, and where, you know, I would see like maybe a box of matzah on the wall, you'd see an Oscar. Is that what you're saying? Like, is it
to
that
be honest,
was your
yes.
grandparents?
Dude, that's exactly right. My grandfather had an Oscar, and when it would sit in an upstairs table in a hallway.
That's yep. what, just sit there, huh?
Yeah, just sitting there. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Wow.
It was cool.
But you never visited a set or anything like that? Or
I don't think I went to a film or television set. My father had an office at the studio where my grandpa worked. They both had offices there. So
sure.
It goes known as my dad's office. And one day I wandered onto a television set without permission when I was about 12 years old. Yeah. And the security guards grabbed me and said, "Kid, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, my dad works down there." And then they realized my dad worked there, and they were very nice to me. But that was honestly, it was a show in the 70s called Night Stalker, I think. If
you were you strolled onto the set of
Night
Stalker, huh?
Amazing.
You stalked the cool. set of, you were the original Night Stalker.
Yeah, I was a stalker on the
net. Age 12?
My dad was just wanted to keep us away. They wanted normalcy, you know, so which I'm ultimately grateful for.
So, yeah, it was good parenting. So, yeah. Like, if you could, your grandfather and your dad would be a great podcast pairing, don't you think?
They
your
would. If they were, right I now? Wish they were still, I wish you know they were still with
like
us.
Like, if you could do that.
If I could do it, that would be the dream.
You know what I'm saying?
The dream guest.
Because it is a neat, again, idea for your podcast, because you come from a family being in the same business to try. Is there any, from your interviews, any through line? From your own experiences that you see that makes for a successful, you know, sort of father-son, father-daughter, mother-daughter, mother-son setup, anything like that?
Here's what's been a really interesting common thing across the professions that we've been doing. Obviously, most of the people, all of the people that we've been talking to are very successful and deeply passionate about what they do. And every parent that has come on has expressed the friction they have felt being a consumed professional and trying to be a parent. Yep. And they all express like, "I wasn't there enough and I felt guilty and,
sure.
you know, and I wish I could have been there more for my kid." And then the adult child is like, "That's totally not true, because watching you do something you cared so much about and have had such an impact on your profession and inspired me to go into my profession has been the greatest example I could have had." So you have this kind of combination of guilt and absolution from, you know, I'm sure all of you guys are the same. You work really hard, and if you have kids, it's like you can't, it's a constant struggle. So that's been pretty neat. The other thing is just, it's a very unique intimacy you share. Like, you know, the coaches Schaefer talk about sharing that professional intensity is a very unique and special thing. Whether you're a basketball coach or an actor or whatever sure. your jam is.
Maybe you could get Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick on.
Yep.
Let's get Steve and his Bill and his son.
Yeah, right? They're on the list.
That. I would do your show. I have teenage kids, but I do work with children. Does that does that suffice?
Well, we'll see if we open up. You know, open up the lens a little bit.
No, that's, what are you complaining about?
We're grown men. Like children, right? We're like in our 40s.
You know,
I take my own snacks to the airport.
That's true.
I
mean,
that's true.
Sure. You get it stuck in security because they need to look at your sandwich.
The kid would do.
One battle after another that hits your desk or that hits your agent or something. What did you think of when you saw that script for the first time?
Oh, well, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, who wrote and directed that film, is one of our, you know, he's one of the bucket list directors you want to work with. He's one of the greatest filmmakers ever. And so, you know, when I got a call saying they were interested in me for this film, it was kind of like an immediate yes. But talking to Paul, when I read that script, it's just so entertaining. I mean, as entertaining as that movie is when you see it, reading it was like being on a roller coaster ride. And also there's this whole sort of kind of subversive social commentary in that film. And the character that I get to play, Virgil Throckmorton, is just absurd. And it was so much fun. And doing it with Sean Penn, whom I'd known for a long time and admired forever, but we hadn't been able to work together.
So when did you first meet him? When had you first cross?
I met Sean
on the set of Night Stalker.
No, it was not. No, it wasn't that early. I think that preceded Sean's career. But we met like I don't know, just through the Hollywood community, through sort of social activism, and then we had mutual friends that you know, and so we met socially and stuff.
Right.
That's all.
But I mean, I'm just wondering how a Paul Thomas Anderson script reads. You know what I mean? Because on the screen, it's just such a vision that obviously he puts into it. I'm just wondering how he jumps off the page. You know,
I said, some of Paul's films are very esoteric, think, I can't imagine how reading this. One battle after another was so entertaining to read. Like I said, it felt like a roller coaster ride. So the experience of the movie, while dazzling, it had the same feeling as a read. It was like you couldn't stop. I felt like I read it in half an hour, and it was a long script because the movie's over 2.5 hours, yeah. and it feels like it's 90 minutes.
And then, again, it's been nominated for 9 Golden Globe nominations.
Yeah, it's had a good week. It's won the Gotham Award, and it's won Critics' Choice Awards. And it's
award season. You're going to be hearing more about it.
Yeah, for sure.
So how did you get involved with Ghost? Was that your first movie?
Ghost was not my first movie. It was my first big part in a movie.
Okay.
I'd been acting for about 5 or 6 years by the time I fought my way in for an audition for Ghost. My wife, Jane, who, as I mentioned, is a designer. She designed scenery for movies, a production designer.
Right.
She's a few years older than me, so her career was already blowing up when I was still struggling as an actor. So she'd done a bunch of big movies, and she was the production designer on Ghost. And she kept coming home at night going, they haven't cast the bad guy in the movie. And I was like, Jane, I can't even get my agents to get me an audition. And she kind of kept on me, and I think she whispered in the ear of the director, like, my husband's an actor. And I finally got an audition, and then I got lucky, and it worked out.
My husband would make a great Carl.
That's right. Yeah. So that was magic.
Yeah. Normally, you don't, I guess, go ahead and nominate a loved one for somebody for playing such a character like
that. Such an evil character.
You know? Like,
love that movie.
I see that in my husband. it is so iconic now. Mm-hmm. At the time, what was it feeling like to you?
It felt to me like I was so grateful to have a job.
Pretty much.
And thrilled that I had such a great part. It felt while we were doing it, that we were doing something that was super special. I remember when I read the script, I thought, God, this movie could be really commercial. But, at that time, you never, ever know if something's going to work. It had been a while since Patrick had a hit. Same with Whoopi. She obviously was a big star, but maybe the past few movies hadn't necessarily been huge. Demi was relatively unknown, and I was completely unknown. And you just never know. And that movie, there wasn't much awareness of it, but I remember we had a sneak preview of the film where they do, and it was Days of Thunder was opening, and that was their big movie, Paramount's big movie.
Right.
And they piggybacked Ghost with Days of Thunder. Like, so Days of Thunder was at 8 and Ghost was at 10, and they did sneak previews with audiences to give it up. Days of Thunder had okay attendance. The 10 o'clock showing of Ghost, for some reason, was packed. I don't know how. I don't know how audiences smelled it out, but from the first screenings of it, people wanted to see
no
this movie.
Kidding.
Wow, that's cool.
And I would tell people about it. They go, Ghost? What is that? I haven't heard anything about that. But audiences smelled it. That poster, that image of Patrick and Demi, there was like this romantic image of them. And people just wanted to see that movie. And then it was a huge hit overnight.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of pottery making being something so romantic.
That's right,
before.
Exactly.
Like that was a newfangled thing.
Yes, or erotic.
Yeah,
right, right.
Well, I mean, but the idea of the movie as well was just a beautiful thing also, and it just hit on so many levels. How tough was it to be a bad guy around Swayze, who is like one of the sweetest guys, right? Ever.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Do you have a good story about him with you and being a young actor on that set?
I do. I have such a sweet story about Patrick. So Patrick was such a beautiful man, and but he was compulsively late. He could not be on time to set, and one day he was like an hour late to set. And he was so anxious about it. And he knew he was so late, so he rode a Harley to this Paramount lot where we were filming to try and dodge traffic. But Harleys are loud. And he gets to the security gate, and the security guards wouldn't let him in. They were like, Mr. Swayze, you're not allowed to bring a motorcycle onto the lot because of the noise. And he said, I'm sorry, guys, I'm late to work. And he ducked down and went under the barrier. And they were chasing him down the lane at Paramount. And he got to his trailer, and he ran inside and locked the door because he was embarrassed. And afterwards, we were sitting around talking, I remember, Demi and I, and he saw the security guards come, and he was telling us the story, and we thought it was hilarious. And he goes, excuse me one second. He goes, and he runs over to these two guys, and he apologizes to them. And he was like, I know, I'm so sorry I did that to you. And I know you guys are just trying to do your job. And they're like, well, Mr. Swayze, it's fine. You know, it was okay. We knew you had to get to work. But that was just such a perfect example of Patrick. Like, I think they were like a block away, and he ran down to apologize to them.
So, just as a follow-up, he left the motorcycle on the other side of the gate?
Or No.
He took the motorcycle?
No, he ducked down and drove his motorcycle
under the arm. Oh, my God. It's like a stuntman.
The security guard, like a stuntman. Yeah, and then rode down, and they were like, jeez. What are you doing? So he felt bad, and he went and, you know, sought them out and apologized to him.
Either way, just like either you're leaving the motorcycle or you're going underneath.
You're not getting through.
Yeah, he was going over.
I would love to hear the security guard perspective of that story. Like, they're just sitting there, normal day. Here comes this maniac on a motorcycle. Wait, it's Patrick Swayze. Where are you going?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, exactly.
Do you run into people who think you are, in fact, the President of the United States? Has that ever happened?
It's the weirdest thing. But it seems people call me Mr. President still every day.
Come on.
I don't know that anyone's actually thought I was president, but I do that as a regular thing of hello, Mr. President.
Hello, Mr. President.
Yep.
I mean, you have played, certainly in this century, one of the more famous presidents of the United States.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true. And people still love that. I mean, one of the great things about, like, you know, streaming television is it's forever new. So
that's
people,
right.
They say, I just finished watching Scandal. I was like, didn't we finish that like in 2018?
You wrapped that almost 10 years ago.
Right.
I know. And we know Namdi Asomugha.
Oh, Nam's the best,
he's
right?
One of the sweetest guys on the planet, who's the worst half of Kerry Washington.
Kerry Washington, exactly.
You know, exactly. He's just a delightful human. Yeah. But I'm just wondering if people
was
literally...
He was a great football player.
He certainly was. Yeah. I know. Have you ever done a sports movie? You ever done one?
No, I have not done.
Think about that.
No, not right. No, I have not.
Okay.
We have an idea maybe for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
There's a man named Philip Rivers, and he might have a movie needed to be made about his story.
It's just announced today he's coming back at age 44.
Philip Rivers.
Wow. Yeah, that actually happened today. We don't know if he's going to actually play, but yeah, the Philip Rivers story. If you can say dadgummit a lot, I don't know, you're working a bowl of time.
Let me try an audition for dadgummit.
There you go.
How was that?
You're hired.
Okay, great.
You're hired. Absolutely.
Easiest audition.
And Law & Order, new episodes return Thursday, January 8th on NBC. Talk about an iconic thing to be involved with.
Yeah, that's been fun. I joined, I think this is my third season.
Right.
I took over for Sam Waterston, who retired after...
I've heard of him.
...many years of being the DA of Manhattan. So now I'm the DA. It's been really, really fun.
And that's, again, you're playing... It's currently in season 25, which is not a misprint. One battle after another, it is in theaters still. Everyone should check that out. I believe it's going to start streaming soon, if I'm not mistaken. And then Far From the Tree podcast, you and your daughter are interviewing folks who are working in the same industry as a parent-child duo. And you obviously know all about those situations. So thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
So fun. That was
really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Tony Goldwyn here, and you can follow him on Instagram and also Twitter at that name as well. Tony Goldwyn here on The Rich Eisen Show. We'll be back to wrap this show up on Tuesday, set up the rest of our 3 days here in New York City in a moment.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
¿Hablas español?
¿Sprichst du Deutsch?
¿Kann du Norsk?
If you used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based techniques teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world, with lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers. Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/Spotify. Spelled BABBEL.com/Spotify. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get into the Hyundai Getaway sales event right now and get away with a deal so right it almost feels wrong. Because right now, you can get a great deal on our most popular models, including our adventure-ready SUVs like the Hyundai Santa Fe and Santa Fe hybrid models. There's also our bold and stylish Elantra, packed with the latest tech, or go all electric with the Ioniq 5 or Ioniq 6. So get down to your local Hyundai dealer right now and get away with an awesome deal only during the Hyundai Getaway Sales Event. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for details. Fun stuff with Tony Goldwyn. Tomorrow's show, we've got Hank Azaria and Paul Rudd in studio. You know Gunther's coming here?
I heard.
How about that?
How about that?
We snuck that one in for you.
Saw that. I'm excited.
You ready? You can ask him all the questions you want, sir.
He's an intimidating man, that guy. So.
Okay, is that right?
Oh, yeah. It's the ring general.
Okay.
He has the honor of wrestling John Cena in John Cena's final
Indeed.
Wrestling match this Saturday. So,
have you caught up on, by the way, speaking of John Cena, have you caught up on Pluribus?
I am not caught up. I'm only through five episodes.
I'm on four.
Okay. Right now. I gave away a little Easter.
So he's in Pluribus?
Not caught up yet.
Thanks for ruining that.
Dude, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Not caught up.
Hey, this just in the Titanic, the boat sinks.
Don't worry about it. No, that's it's not the same. It's not the same.
Jack doesn't live.
Oh, boy. So, listen, remember I told you Shedeur Sanders, his stat line was the first of its kind in the history of the Cleveland Browns. Did I tell you about how Shedeur Sanders, his stat line in terms of a rookie, mm-hmm. was only something that Joe Burrow's done this in the Super Bowl era.
Super Bowl era.
And in terms of this century, the only quarterback to have four passing plays of 40 or 50 yards or longer, one of those two, in his first three starts of the National Football League was Aaron Rodgers. So he's done something nobody's done for the Browns. He's done something only Joe Burrow's done in the Super Bowl era. And he's done something only Aaron Rodgers has done this century. And that is the way I set up the Rich Eisen Show's favorite internet auntie, Jackie in Virginia, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Jackie?
Hey.
You there, Jackie? Oh, boy. I gave the whole setup.
That's a great setup.
Jackie.
But there you are.
How are you, Jackie?
I was going to have an awesome game. I had already played on it. And his auntie was able to watch the whole game. He did so good. I was just so proud of this kid. You would thought he was mine. He did really good. I was proud of him. I love Cam also, but I was really proud of Shedeur. And I can't wait to see what else he's going to do. Because I think he's gonna do really good.
Jackie, for us to sit there at the draft and watch the manner in which he got drafted, right? And to say, hey, at some point, Cam Ward. And
yes, ma'am.
Can you hear us, Jackie? Can you hear us?
Hello.
Unfortunately,
Jackie, I'm
here. I know.
Oh, no.
Right,
we hear you.
For Jackie, unfortunately, she can't hear us. She'll have to call us back. But, again, for Shedeur to do what he did against Cam Ward, if you had told everybody at the draft, say, around the sixth round, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders are going to play each other at some point this season. Because we'd know the Titans and the Browns are going to play in week 14.
Right.
And it'll be like, let's just say they face each other. What's going to happen? And the fact is, Cam Ward would come out with the win. Wouldn't surprise us, right? But Shedeur Sanders would account for four touchdowns and throw for over 350 yards.
I'd be like, how does he lose that game?
Right? Certainly with knowing that Myles Garrett had already taken the Bucs, and they got their first two draft choices were on defense also, in Mason Graham and also Schlesinger, who might be the defensive rookie of the
probably
year.
Probably is, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is he the leader right now?
He's odds.
I think
right
he's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be tough press to figure out who else would be. But that is pretty amazing. Had Jackie been able to hear me, my last follow-up question is your thoughts on him being taken out for the two-point conversion at the very end. Probably wouldn't have gone very well.
I don't think so.
I don't know if this is a should I go back to the phone lines? Are we good enough to go back to the phone lines? I think we're done, unfortunately, for those who are on hold. Mike Tomlin, everybody, had his press conference today. He always speaks on Tuesdays in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he was asked about being on the hot seat. And that is today's edition of Straight Outta Tomlin.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Our kicker is a serial killer.
Straight out of Tomlin.
Said you understand your role as a head coach to when negative things happen. DK after the game said Mike takes a lot of bullets for us. I'm curious, 19 years into does taking those bullets get wearying at any point for you?
It's the job.
like one of those bullets was at the Bills game, fans calling for your job. Did you feel like you were in the hot seat at all last week?
Man, I've been in the hot seat for 19 years.
Did you feel like you had something to prove to the fans at all?
I always feel like I got something to prove, not necessarily to anyone in particular, but that's just the spirit in which I go about what I do professionally.
Straight out of Tomlin.
I love the guy, man.
The spirit in which I do things professionally just has a way of putting things.
I know. But I've been on the hot seat for 19 years, he says.
That's probably not entirely true.
I think what he,
but
what
I understand what he means.
What he means is basically saying, I'm a head coach in the National Football League.
Right.
It's always something that you've got to do.
Right.
You've got to live, you know, and you live week to week. You have to make sure that you survive and advance every single week. And it doesn't
especially
matter
with that
where
fan
you are.
Base, man. They, right.
They what? They go ahead and give voice to it. You,
well, I mean,
you unsold them sneakers at the, you know.
I did. Steelers, the thing about the Steelers fans is they feel like every year they should win the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know what I mean? And anything less than that, they are unhappy with. And pick any of these other teams, right? How many of them would love to have a coach who's never had a losing season?
That,
and yet,
well, I mean,
it doesn't
you know,
resonate
Steelers
anymore.
Fans are done with that stat.
Yeah, yeah.
They're finished with that
stat. Yeah, like you said, expectations are different. For
people, I think right? At this point in time, Steelers fans aren't expecting the Super Bowl this year. I think if they go anywhere near close to the Super Bowl, it would be a remarkably, you know, pleasant surprise for
them.
Well,
I think the last couple of years, Steelers fans have resigned themselves to the fact that they are just an 8-9, 9-8 team. This is who they are.
Well,
they're
never
not going to change because ownership doesn't want to change. They have no plan at quarterback, and Tomlin is just another coach.
You've pretty much hit the nail on the head, I think.
Well, look who at this point in time is leading the division going into the Monday night game. To wrap up week 15 against a 6-7 Dolphins team.
I get it, but they're probably going to go 9-8 again, right?
Well, they'll be 8-6 after this game if they win this game. And I mean, again, The Miami Dolphins are going to be coming into this game on a red hot win streak, but it's going to be bitter cold. It's not like New York City was any, New Jersey was like a day in the park.
No, I was surprised too. It came out as hot as he did against that game against the Jets because traditionally in the 30 degree temperature wise, he does not perform well and does not win those type
who,
type
Mike
of games.
McDaniel you're talking about?
No, Tua.
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 Well, I mean, again, the way through is Achane, who got hurt, but he almost had 100 rushing yards before he got hurt. You got over 100.
He said he could have finished the game, but
well, yeah. Guess what?
Yeah.
He's going to go to Pittsburgh, PA, and that is a massive contest. Yeah. But the Steelers, 100% with that win last week, have set themselves up.
They did
to take care of business over the final month of this season. You know, and Tomlin, I think his way of saying I have been on the hot seat the last 19 years, if I may, is. He's not going to spike the football because there's still a month to go in a season.
Oh, Rodgers kind of did that a little bit, though.
Well, Rodgers said, well, you shut you up for the rest of the for a week, is what he said. And then kind of shot a look of like, you know, tell me I'm wrong.
Right.
You know, he gave the international symbol of tell me I'm wrong about that.
It's going to be 23 degrees in Pittsburgh.
At
game time. Yeah. At kickoff.
Dolphins, Lions, Browns.
Are you strolling in his lane?
Yeah, I should have gave that to him. My bad, Mike.
Give me the final four.
You mentioned the Dolphins on Monday night there. At Lions, at Browns, home for Ravens.
At Lions. Let me just tell you, everybody, if the Steelers are going into that game at 8-6,
ooh.
Okay, and the Lions and the Ravens are right behind them, okay? Let's just throw that out there. And it's Rodgers' last spin in the NFC North. His last visit. He unfortunately missed the Bears visit. And this is his last visit in the NFC North. He is 100% going to show up in that game just like out of his mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the Lions are going to need it too.
Yep.
That is going to be a massive game.
Ravens-Bengals this week.
Oh, my goodness. Week 15 is lit.
Week 14 felt like a playoff weekend, man.
Well, it did.
Because there were some heavy hitting. There were some great matchups.
Last night's game was sick. Yeah. Last night's game was, you know, it felt like a fever dream half the time when it was, what, 6 points and six turnovers in the second quarter?
The Texans Chiefs felt like a playoff game with the big hits.
So did the Bills and the Bengals, and so on and so forth. That'll wrap it up for this Tuesday edition of the Rich Eisen Show.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney+, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.